introduce our first speaker, Ms. Liz H.
Hi, everybody. My name is Liz H., and I'm a recovering addict. And I just want to thank the God of my understanding right now for everything. Because he is so good. You know, I'm just like in awe right now. You know, the topic is surrender to win. And I want to thank the CPRCNA 21 Convention Committee for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. Last year, I worked on this committee, and I know I take my hat off to you guys because y'all got a job on y'all hand. It takes a whole year to plan this convention, so I take my hat off to you. I love you, Arsonia. I'm truly honored to stand here amongst my fellow recovering addicts because it is truly a miracle that we have made it, you know. And I don't mean like saying that we have arrived anywhere, but we're clean today. I'm going to just briefly qualify. I live to use and I use to live. You know, I'm originally from Newark, New Jersey. And, you know, I see some fellow members from Newark, New Jersey in the audience, and I just want to say I'm elated because it's always good to see a familiar face, you know. Where I came from, we didn't surrender to nothing. Surrender was not an option for us. The disease was so powerful for me. I can remember as a very, very young girl, you know, just doing whatever it is I wanted to do. You know, my friend told me to have fun with this, and sometimes, y'all, I don't know how to do that. I'm very nervous. Because this is scary for me. A lot of times I don't do this. I'm service. I like to serve. I like to be behind the scenes where you can't really see me, but you know I'm there. This right here is so humbling. Because this right here means that I got to give up something of me. And a lot of times I just want to hold on and hold on. That's right. And this is another level of surrender for me, to allow everybody here into my life. Like I said, to briefly qualify, I lived to use, and I started getting high at a very, very young age. My mother was an alcoholic, and I can remember as a little girl growing up in this house, and I had a father who was there for a very, very short time, and my mother used to have these little parties, and you know, at the end of the night, there was all these little beer cans laying on the floor and in the living room, and I can remember going past all these beer cans, picking them up and drinking out of them. You know, for me, that was exciting. You know, I got very, very tipsy. I remember one time me and my brother stole my mother's liquor bottle. You know, my mother used to drink vodka. You know, that white stuff. And we used to always wonder why my mother used to always be all woozy and hee-hee and ha-ha. And we wanted to experience that. So we stole her vodka bottle. And we proceeded to drink this liquid, and it got me all warm and fuzzy inside. And, I mean, we drank the whole thing. I think it was a whole pint. Well, to the end of it, my brother and I both passed out. And I could remember my mother screaming, trying to wake both of us up. I guess that was the first experience of having a blackout. I didn't know that then, but I know that now that that's what I had done. I had blacked out. And I couldn't remember anything other than that I felt warm inside. And I wanted to feel like that again. So growing up in this house with my mother and all this activity going on with all this drinking and fighting, you know, it was mass hysteria growing up. You know, and that's all I knew, you know. My father eventually left because, you know, he was a drug addict. And the drugs called him. And he no longer wanted to stay and be a father to me and my brother, so he left. And I always wondered, why did my father leave? I grew up having a big hole inside because I suffered a serious loss at a very young age. I think I was 6 when he left. I had no male role model in my life. Y'all, if I'm jumping around the place, please bear with me. So growing up having this big empty hole inside, you know, all I knew how to fill it was, you know, entertainment, you know. My mother would have these parties and I would dance in the middle of the floor. And, you know, they would give me quarters to dance, you know. They would say, here, baby, do that little turn again. And I would take that quarter, you know. You know, I fed off of that because, you know, I got attention from that, you know. I seeked love because I really wasn't getting it at home. So I did whatever I had to do. I need to say I was the only girl in my family. I was raised with boys. Knowing how boys are when you grow up, they're rough. You know, I was raised with my brother and two uncles, and they used to beat me up on a regular. And I mean, I'm not talking about like just push you down. I mean, they used to beat me up on a regular. I remember an occasion where my uncle beat me up so bad that he pushed me in the closet and gave me a bloody nose, and I just stayed there. These were the kinds of events that happened in my life as a little girl. I didn't know anything about femininity. I didn't know anything about being cute. I didn't know anything about being dainty. All I knew how to do was this, fight. My struggle was get them before they get you, because that's what my uncles had taught me. You know, you don't let nobody come in your space. So all I knew my whole life was to put these up. Going into school, that's what I did. I beat up the girls, and girls beat me up. You know, but you could best believe if you crossed my path, there was a fight. You know, and this ties right into surrender because I didn't know how to do that. My whole entire life was centered around chaos, disturbance, insanity, confusion. There was no general direction in my life. Growing up in the projects, if anybody is familiar with Brick City, Lincoln Street Projects, Prince Street Projects, you had to fight. That was survival to us. I couldn't go to West Kennedy Street and be this dainty, cute little girl because I got my ass chased down West Kennedy Street Hill, you know. And that's what happened to me. On many days, I ran home. I got tired of running home. My first introduction to drugs was through a family member, and she had this little green stuff, and she said, we roll this up and put this in some paper, and we smoke it. And I was like, okay, you know, because I was down with the get down, you know. I had no self-esteem, so whatever you was doing, I was doing it too, because I wanted to be accepted, you know. So I smoked this stuff, and it made me giggly and all crazy inside, but I liked it. You know, just like I liked that liquor that me and my brother drank when I was 5, I liked the feeling that I felt when I smoked this marijuana. So I continued to do that for years, you know. And my life just kept going on, you know. I was just going along with the program, just going along with whatever was coming, fighting, just being a total nuisance. You know, nothing was happy in my life, you know. And then I met a man. I ain't talking about no boy. I met a man. And this man was in the project selling drugs. And this man was big time, y'all. I'm this little puny, skinny little girl. You know, I had no self-esteem. I had no self-confidence. I didn't really have any self-worth in myself. But he looked at me and said, ooh, you're cute. Come on, let me take you out to dinner. So this man took me out, treated me like a queen, so I thought, you know. Put some money in my pocket, told me if I ever needed anything, he'd give me a call. Being this great idea I had in my head, ooh, I found me a sugar daddy. See, because that's how I thought. You know, if I can get something out of you without doing anything for it, that's what I wanted to do. So I proceeded to mind trip myself with this man that I'm going to play him. And lo and behold, I got played. Because this man was really the enemy. He was the disease manifested in a man's body. This man had nothing good for me. I left home at the age of 17 chasing this man because I liked the kind of lifestyle that he was living, so I thought. I liked to be able to go to sleep when I wanted to go to sleep, wake up when I wanted to wake up, have money in my pocket, go shopping, do whatever I want. Because that was attractive to me. I ain't had to work for nothing. You know, to me, that was okay. It's like I said in the beginning, I had no guidance and no direction. I had nobody showing me the right way. I had nobody giving me that love and concern. I didn't have that. But this man was showing me all that. Plus, he had money. Because money is a trigger for me, y'all. So this man wound up leaving New Jersey and asked me, did I want to go? And at first, I said no. He left for a while, and I suffered through the projects of having no money, waiting on the welfare check to the first of the month, and then the 10th of the month, starving for the rest of the month. And I got tired of living like that. And this man eventually came back in my life and said, hey, I'm down in Washington, D.C. You want to come? I said, hell yeah. He said, I'm going to send you a ticket. I want you to get to New York, get this ticket, and get on the bus and get down here. And I jumped on that bus. I ain't had no money, but I jumped the turnstile, caught the PATH train over to New York, jumped on the bus, got that ticket, and Washington, D.C., here I came. Some girl that was in his little network met me at the bus station. She had this little itty-bitty mini skirt on. She had this cute little black jacket. She had a cute hairstyle. She was real cute. I was like, damn. She said, you could have this too. I was like, oh, really? So she took me where this man was. And she said to me, is there anything that you would be willing to do for him? Now, mind you, I just left what I thought was fire, the hell, leaving the projects. I ain't want to go back to that shit. So I said, I'll do anything he asked me to do. Well, this man asked me, would I walk up and down 14th Street and sell my body? It's like, sell my body? How you do that? Mind y'all, I didn't go into the fact that, you know, I had been molested as a little girl by a family member that had been touching me for many years. And it started off with him giving me candy. He wanted to touch my boobies. I said, you got to give me something. You ain't just going to be touching on me. So he gave me candy, and I let him touch me. I had experience at a very young age of fair exchange, ain't no robbery. So when this man asked me to do this, I was like, okay. He took me to the stores, bought me the little gig, bought me a wig, and put me out on 14th Street. Now, anybody of y'all living in the Washington, D.C. area back in the 80s know what 14th Street looked like. I was 17 years old, very scared, timid little girl. Didn't know nothing about nothing. I was green and was thrown to the wolves. At that point in my life, I had only one choice. Either you sink or you swim. I didn't want to go back home because my pride wouldn't let me do that. So I jumped in feet first. That was my surrender. I jumped in feet first. And I turned every trick possible. I made as much money as possible. Because inside, I was dying. Because inside, I didn't want to feel what was really going on with me. It was easier to lay on my back and take the money than to face the reality of what my life had turned out.
Come on, Liz. Come on, Liz.
So I did that for many years. All inside, my spirit was dying. Of course, when you out there in the game like that, you get introduced to so many things. And this girl that was in our little network, you know, as they call them back then, your little bottom hoe, she introduced me to the pipe. You know, and up until that point, I had only just maybe sniffed a little bit, smoked a little weed. But she introduced me to the pipe. Boy, what did she do that for? Because that's when my disease took off. I took that first hit. And our literature talks about it. It's the first one that gets us, not the last one. Whew. I can remember I was in a hotel on New York Avenue. And I think I might have had about a couple hundred dollars in my pocket. Before it was all said and done, I had lint in my pocket. Nothing. And I had to go back and tell this man that I made no money that night. That is not something a prostitute tells a pimp, that you have no money. Because he don't understand that. What? So I had to learn a whole lot of tricks of the trade. You know, I had to learn how to rob. I had to learn how to pull man's pants down and steal a wallet while they, you know, I mean, you had to do those kinds of things when you was out there. There was no surrender. Because if I surrendered, that meant I would die. You know. My disease took me in many states, looking at so many strange faces, and just being so miserable with myself that I felt nothing. I was empty inside. I was just a shell, and I was going through the motion. You know, I'm sharing this because my acceptance of myself at that time was this. I had none, and I did whatever that man said do just to be a part of, even if that meant killing myself. Well, that world got too big for me, y'all. I couldn't do it anymore. And as a direct result of living in that world, I got pregnant. You know, I got pregnant, and I got pregnant by somebody out there on the streets. And it wasn't that I was irresponsible and didn't practice safe sex, because I did. Condom broke. I need to say that, you know, when I got pregnant with this child, the decision was, either you gonna have or you not. I was so torn inside, I didn't know what to do. But a little voice came to me and something tapped me on my shoulder and said, "Had this baby." All my life, I never listened to nothing and nobody and nothing. But something in my spirit said, "You cannot get rid of this baby. This may be your only chance at life, true love, happiness." And I listened. And eventually, the lifestyle, like I said, got too big for me that I finally left that man while I was pregnant with this baby. And I went back home to Newark, New Jersey, to my mother's house, back to the project where it all started. And so I thought I was beginning to face myself and my life. But it was in that small decision to do something so selfless, to allow myself to give life, God, to help me give life. My journey started at that moment. And I had that baby. And I need to tell y'all that my daughter, my daughter has been a thriving force in my life. She was that moment of clarity for me. She separated the bullshit from what was real for me. She really made me see that you can't do this by yourself. And I had this baby. While I was carrying this baby, my mother died. And my mother was all I had. And I mean, we grew up with a real rocky relationship. I didn't like her. She didn't like me. I was just like her. You know, I did whatever I wanted. I didn't listen to her. I didn't obey her, but I loved her. And when she left this earth, a part of me died with her. Whew. A part of me died with her. But I had this baby growing inside of me. And that was the only thing that I could hold on to. This little warm little baby gave me life. You know, and I'm supposed to be the mother giving her life, but she gave me life. She gave me a reason to live. She gave me a reason to believe in something other than what I was already believing. So I had this child, and she's a beautiful girl. Whew, beautiful. And I need to say that, you know, while I was carrying her, I did not do no drugs. I stopped for those 9 months, so she was a healthy baby. But after I had her, yeah, I went back, because you know that's what we do. You know. I was living back in Newark in the projects on welfare, and I ain't have nothing. And I didn't know how to get something. All I knew how to do was to lay on my back and beg men for money. And I was tired of doing that. So I took a suggestion from a woman. She said, go get on public assistance. They'll help you. And they did, as far as I would let them. But that even started to come to a slow crawl. And I can remember that man, again, coming into my life telling me that, you know, he would be the baby's father and he would get a baby a name, and he did. He gave my daughter his name, even though he knew that she was not his child. And he told me if I didn't get myself together that he was going to take my daughter from me, and I couldn't allow that to happen. So I had my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous in 1989. I went to a treatment facility in Riverside, Philadelphia. I stayed in that center for 28 days. And at that center, the seed was planted. I heard something there. All I heard was keep coming back. I ain't know what the hell I was coming back for. They just said keep coming back. So I said, okay. I left that facility and I went back home. By this time, my aunt was taking care of my daughter because the man abandoned me again. And my aunt said, don't worry, baby, I'll take care of her. As long as you're doing what you need to do, I'll take care of her. And I came home and I tried. I mean, with all the earnest in my heart, I tried to stop. But I was doing it by myself. You know, I heard in the treatment facility that when you get out, the first thing you do is make a meeting. I didn't do that. I heard that when you get out, get a sponsor. I didn't do that. I heard make a meeting every day for 90 days. I didn't do that. I just got out. And my attempt at recovery was real feeble, and eventually after 55 days, I went back to smoking crack. And I want to tell y'all, you know, the vicious cycle. I picked right back up right where I left off from. The very same day, I was back on the corner selling my ass smoking crack. And the cycle just started all over again. And I was so miserable. I was so miserable because now I had a baby. The very thing that I felt gave me life, gave me a reason for living that I was willing to surrender to, the disease robbed me from it, took it from me again. I allowed it to take it from me again. Until one day I found myself again. I was standing on Frelinghuysen Avenue. For those of you who know anything about Newark, New Jersey, Frelinghuysen Avenue is the strip. They call it Ho's Graveyard. And I was standing on this corner in a dark, you know, standing in a dark corner. I didn't want my grandmother to see me because my grandmother lived off of Frelinghuysen Avenue in Dayton Street Projects, Seth Borden Projects. And she would leave to go to work at 5:00 in the morning. And I was standing in this little cut so she wouldn't see me because I'm waiting for this trick to ride by. I don't want my grandmother to see me doing that. But she knew. She knew what I was doing. She knew I wasn't standing out there no 5:00 in the morning in the rain with an umbrella for nothing. So, that day, I'll never forget that day. I was tired. I was really tired. I had been up for 4 days, hadn't eaten, hadn't washed my ass, hadn't done nothing but smoke crack. And that day, I was ready to surrender. And something just ran across my mind. Go to detox. I don't know where the hell it came from. It just said, go to detox. And I reached out to another recovering, not a recovering addict, to a friend, and asked that friend, could you please help me? And he made a phone call and got me in St. Elizabeth's General Hospital. And they got me a bed. And I stayed in that facility for 8 days. And in that facility, I met a counselor, and this counselor told me, you know, because I had this old dramatic plan once the fog cleared and I got a little bit rest and I stopped coughing. Oh, I'm going to a long-term treatment facility and let my family take care of my daughter. I was running. See, because that's what I do. I do that very well. I run. And he said, Liz, you got the tools. Don't run. You know what to do. Everything that you didn't apply the first time you was here, apply it now. When you leave here, go straight to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Get there early. Sit on the front row. When they open the meeting, tell them that you knew. Tell them that you're here for the first time and that you really need some help. And just wait and see what happens. And I did that. When I left that detox, that was I followed his instructions to the T. For the first time in my life, I listened to somebody else other than Liz. And I walked through that door, and I sat on the front row, and I raised my hand and said, my name is Liz, and I'm new. It's my first meeting. And the thunder of the clapping from people acknowledging that I was new. Oh, my God. It scared me, but it felt good at the same time. And people just came up to me and gave me hugs and said, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. We are here for you. You are the most important person at this meeting. And it was like a big weight fell off my shoulders. In that moment, I knew this is where I belonged. In that moment right there, I surrendered to the Narcotics Anonymous program. In that moment, I remember on the back of our meeting list, you know, it gave us some simple suggestions. It said, make 90 meetings in 90 days. I think I made 180 meetings in 90 days. See, I ain't had no job. I wasn't going to school. I ain't had nothing to do, so I made meetings every day. Sometimes 2 and 3 meetings a day. I caught the bus to meetings. I walked to meetings. You know, people told me, just get to the meeting. I'll get you home. You know, I'm talking about a different level of surrender here because it was no longer me going on what I thought. Everything that I thought kept me in deep shit, in trouble. Everything that I thought and believed kept me sick. Everything that I thought and believed kept me out there on the streets using day in and day out for years. So when I came in here and really, really surrendered, the possibilities, they talk about it in the second step, that this could happen for me. That this could happen for me. And every day that I came to a meeting, it was like, wow, I'm clean again. The realization that, oh my God, I'm clean. I was vigorous when I first got here. The enthusiasm that I had as a newcomer, oh my God, it's like dancing, you know? When you hear that good song and you dance to a nice club song, that's how I felt my first 90 days here. Then I got some business. I met a man. And he was fine, I'm going to tell y'all. See, because a man is part of my story. When I look back on my story, everything that happened to me all resulted from me getting involved with a man, me allowing myself to get consumed by a man. I need to say I met this man. He was a womanizer. He was fine. All the women wanted him, so he was a challenge for me. So I just had to have him. And I need to say I got him. I got him, I married him, I loved him. Loved his dirty drawers more than I loved myself. And in the midst of loving him so much, and I'm talking about loving him clean, I had never done that. Loving anybody or anything clean. But I loved him so much that I forgot who the hell I was. And because I forgot who the hell I was, eventually, you know what I did, right? I used again. After being a meeting maker, having all this enthusiasm, all this energy, you know, because I came to meetings faithfully, but But that's all I did. I came to meetings. I didn't do nothing different. I was still manipulating. I was still conniving. I was still doing sneaky shit. I was still doing conniving things to people. I hadn't let go of the system. I hadn't surrendered none of the behaviors. I just surrendered the drug. The behaviors were still prevalent in my life. And as a direct result, at 3.5 years clean, I made a decision to go back and smoke some more crack. And the vicious cycle started all over again. I picked right back up where I left off from. And I mean, it was worse this time. Because I experienced a spiritual death this time. It wasn't like the other ones. Because they was physical, so I thought. This time, I got in touch with the inside. For real. And I was like, oh my God. I looked up, 6 months had gone by, and I was still standing in the same place. Still having the same clothes. My daughter is growing through all of this, y'all. And she looking at me for the first time. She really got a real look at what an addict looked like. And I remember the day she realized that I was getting high. That wonderful light that was in her eyes, it immediately turned off. I don't ever want to forget that day. And she cried. She said, no, mommy, please don't tell me you're using drugs. And I looked at her in the back of the car and said, shut up. And kept proceeding to do what I do. Well, that didn't last long. Because I hit that bottom one more again. And I was in my bathroom and I found myself in a fetal position, balled up, saying, God, please help me, because I can't do this no more. It was no longer about satisfying anybody. It was no longer about making my husband happy. It was no longer about making my family happy. For once in my life, I had to do something for Liz and mean it. God, in his infinite wisdom, he put another recovering addict in my path. It's always about you guys. This is where I get my greatest source of strength from, right here. From one addict to another, the therapeutic value. And that addict said, Liz, I'm going to a meeting. You want to go? I said, no. Maybe. Okay, I'll go. And I went with her to that meeting. And I remembered my surrender the first time. I was still timid, but I came and I sat in the front. And I timidly raised my hand, said I was coming back. That's all I had to say. I couldn't even get I was coming back out good enough, and the whole room just charged at me. We've been looking for you, Liz. We love you. Welcome back. There were some who shied me, but most of you guys loved me. People came to my aid. They say, now what you gonna do different? I said, I can't tell you. All I can do is show you. And it's been in my walk. It ain't about what I say when I'm up here or when I'm in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It's about how I live this. The proof of these steps, as it says in our basic text, is shown in the way that we live. My surrender today ain't for nobody but for me, to please the God of my understanding. Every day I make a conscious decision when I roll out the bed. When he breathe breath in my life, I hit the floor and I say, thank you, Father, for giving me this day. And my next decision is, I ain't smoking no crack today. Then after that is, thank you, Father, for giving me a job. Let me get my ass up so I can go to work. You know, because my priorities today are not about what man I can be with, or how many pretty fine dresses and outfits I can have, or how many nice cars I can obtain, or how big my fucking house is. No, it ain't about none of that. It's about having that peace inside. I got a little cheat sheet. Surrender. Give up or agree to forego to the power or possession of another. Relinquish possession or control over. Acceptance of despair. A verbal act of admitting defeat. The delivery of a principle into lawful custody. the act of surrendering. And that's what I've done. I've surrendered to this disease of addiction. Just for this day, I'm not willing to allow the disease to rob me another precious moment. You know, it has been a wonderful journey. I need to say I stand before you today, God willing, May 18th, I'll celebrate 11 years. And I don't say that to boast. I share that for the newcomer. Because if I can do it, an addict like me, who came from the pits of hell, who walked up and down 14th Street in Washington, D.C. and saw her ass, who came from the projects and had no guidance and structure or any kind of love in her life, I'm here to tell you, I have found it right here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. It is about love here. It is about service, because I believe in service. Without service, I could not stay here. It is in the service that I have found my greatest strength. And for you, all who sit out here who don't have a commitment, I implore you, please. We got so many groups that need help. Please give back what was so freely given to you. Because this is only a daily reprieve. I know I can walk out this door today. The day ain't over. And make that decision to smoke. But I've given to him my will, my power. He has come into my heart and in my life, and he said, baby girl, if you just follow me, the world is your pearl. I want to say this, and then I'm going to shut up. On my email, I have a little saying. Speak kindly, for those that you meet are always fighting some kind of struggle. Love generously. Give graciously. And leave the rest to God. My name is Liz H. I'm a recovering addict.
My name is Sterling. I'm an addict. And our next speaker is Thomas P.
Thomas, and I'm an addict. Good to be here. What an opportunity. What an opportunity. In my wildest dreams, I never thought I'd be standing here sharing my experience, dreaming, hoping anything. I'm just that an addict. When I use them, a real cruddy, low-down, no-good, stinking dope fiend. So surrender didn't come easy for me. You know, always had that mindset, I'm a soldier, you know, I can handle it, you know, I got this. But let the truth be told, I took a vicious ass whipping out there, you know. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, let me tell the truth. I can't sit here and brag and dress it up, because if I do, y'all know I'm lying. So this is an opportunity for me to free myself and tell the truth. Yeah, I took a whipping. The sad part about it, I wasn't born an addict. I'm the kind of guy that always wanted to fit in. I wanted to be accepted. So I pretty much did that. Everything more like what I did to be accepted. My story is real simple. I use. I didn't know until I got to Narcotic Anonymous that I had a lot of resentments. It was a lot of anger. It was a lot of hatred and a lot of disappointment. I never knew my biological father. Always wanted to. My mother, who I love so dearly, gave me away. And I say it like that because that's what happened. But I understand after getting here and doing some work with my sponsor, she didn't actually give me away. She gave me to some people that she thought could do a better job than she was. And for a long, long time, of many, many years, I carried that anger. I carried that pain. It's funny, though, how God just changed things and turned around when you really don't even want it to, or you're just not aware of what's going on. I can remember having this strong desire to live with this woman. And I would go find her. And she would say, "This is my son. Now you gotta go." I had no idea that she was dealing with shame herself. Never knew. Never knew. So what took place with my pain is that I would act out in and out of institutions, trying to fit in, be part of. I would never do this. I'm not going to be like him or be like her. But I did. I can remember what they call the Beltway Bandit, being arrested or locked up all around the Beltway. And I remember going through R&D in Virginia. Y'all know what R&D is. I'm sure some of y'all do. They said, "Man, you finally made it. You've been around the Beltway." And that would sound real, real slick. So me trying to fit in, wanting to be part of, I was all right with that. That's the insanity, to be comfortable with living that lifestyle. That's crazy. I know that now. I didn't know it then. Surrender is not easy, just like I said. But my story, I try to stay away from the drug laws because we know how that go. But the end of my story forced me to surrender or die. A guy on my job was asking me the other day, I was reading my Just for the Day, he said, "Man, how do you know when enough's enough?" I said, "Man, everybody's bottom is different. But when you hit that bottom, you know." Now, that's not to say that you're going to stop, but you know. My bottom was a park bench in mid-January with a brown paper bag, what I got on or less, and I said, "Man, I got this thing." Now, in the process of this, I had built a relationship by then with my mom, and I'm real cool with my sisters. But the shame kept me away. I was so ashamed, or was I in denial? I was in denial. I was ashamed, but I was definitely in denial. Because what I did, I fed myself a lot of good information. Yeah, check it out. So I stayed on the go. But I believe in praying, and I knew something about a God. So I would always pray. And I remember going to this shelter, 2nd and D. And I was trying to get in one of them programs. And the requirement was 90 days, every day making me. I think I got about 78, and I caught the flu. So I couldn't get in that program. But I look back at that effort that I was putting in, and I was still faking. Because I'm sure in 78 days I would have heard something. I didn't even hear it keep coming back. Denial, faking. Went through the process of healing with the pneumonia and all that, and went right back to the races. Came back around again and tried it one more time. Got the government job, worked for about 6 months maybe, had me a few little clothes, a girlfriend, a little money. Living in the shelter now. Man, I don't need y'all. I don't need them meats, man. I'm out of here. Same thing. So my surrender came with a war. A war itself. Like I told you, I was always trying to fit in. I really couldn't find myself. I really didn't know who I was. So what I was doing was gravitating to anything that was negative, so I ain't had to face self. Made it back in 92. Haven't found it necessary to use since. That's a blessing from God.
Yes.
My date, I always say, is so symbolic or important. This same lady that helped me breathe, gave me life, that I had developed these feelings for, she died 8/23/91. My clean date is 8/23/92. My sister said, "Baby, you know what?" I said, "What, sis?" She said, "Our uncle's birthday is 8/23/2. I said, "What? I don't know about the catching them numbers. Only that God seemed fit for me to get here and get clean and stay clean." My surrender coming from quitting, giving up, I'm through. I cannot handle this. I need some help. As Liz was saying, thank God for the steps, thank God for a sponsor. My recovery came with a foot in my behind. That's how it was. I asked him, he said, "Yeah," and he wasn't going for nothing. I'm such a defiant person and very stubborn that this power knew the kind of person I needed in my life to help me. And that's what he gave me. I talk about this a lot, and I try to pass this on to my sponsees about how he had me on my knees at the Metropolis Club, if any of y'all been there, scrubbing in bathrooms. I did not like that. But he simply told me, "If you want to stay clean, then this is what you'll do." I didn't get too many suggestions. I got, "This is what you got to do." You know, and I was able to follow that. I can remember my big sis saying, "You talk too much." I said, "You don't tell me what to do." She said, "Shut the song up." I didn't understand it then, but I understand now. If I keep my mouth shut, I can hear something. But if I'm talking, I can't hear nothing.
That's right.
My surrender come with me bringing on pain to myself. I learned to look at the part I play. I want to blame the woman when it don't go good. I want to blame the job when it ain't working out right. The alarm clock ain't right, man. Y'all ain't, you know. Everybody, I'm an angel. I don't do no wrong. I don't make no mistakes. No. My name Thomas, not St. Thomas. You are a human being. You will fall short. Get your foot out your butt. Stop beating yourself up. I had to learn how to surrender and then learn how to forgive me. And that came with teaching. I did not come in here liking like that, talking like that, thinking like that, No, it was taught to me. I try to be a good student because I want to learn. The topic is real good and it's fitting, surrender to win. I have surrendered in a lot of areas, but there's room for improvement. So my surrender has to come on a daily basis. Even when I really don't want to, I just told you I'm defiant and I can go there in a heartbeat. But I've learned how to weigh the pros and cons and see the look for the balance in the scale. I want some peace. I want some love. I want some joy. And I want a clear state of mind. In order for me to surrender and win, I have to die clean. If I die clean, I have won. If I continue to surrender, the chances are better that that's what will happen at the end. My resentments are nowhere like they used to be. I'm a firm believer that I cannot get what I don't give. I told you how petty I was. One more time, come with experience. I was helping this guy one time to go buy some Pampers for his daughter, me and my sponsor. He had a lot of money. I had a couple dollars too. But the pettiness comes from this here. He's doing something for his daughter. He offered me $5, and I got a pocket full of money, or some money, and I accepted it. My sponsor said, man, why did you take that money? I said, man, I burned my gas up on him down here. You know how we do blah, 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 blah. He said, man, but the man needed help. He got a brand new kid. He's buying Pampers. And you got some money. So I look at him, I say, okay. But what I learned out of that is always good to be able to, if you can, do something for someone with no strings attached. If you can. Now, I'm not saying take the mortgage money and say, here, Liz. And then next month you say, Liz, can I spend the night with you? No. Let's not get it twisted. I've just been taught. I had no knowledge of narcotics, no knowledge of recovery, none whatsoever. I'm blessed in many ways. I have sponsees that sponsor me. If you think they don't, get into a relationship and fall short and see what happens. I'm telling you my experience. Nothing that I'm guessing. Nothing that I'm figuring out. Yeah. This has been a real, real tough road in a relationship. But I understand the part I play. Through the beginning of the process, it was, you did this. You did that. This is what I brought to the table. This is what you asked for. I'm a victim. No.
That's right.
You allowed it. You was a volunteer. So how do I surrender in that area? Because when I got a lot of feelings built up, caring, loving feelings, you surrender, you back up. You understand that you don't have any power. You cannot manage what's taking place. You are not in control. Look at you, regroup, get yourself together. Go through a series of prayer and meditation. Ask God for some help. Talk about your feelings. Do not lie, Thomas. Free yourself. Tell the truth about the part you play, not the part they play. Then you can get some help. I haven't used. I've been honest, and I've told the truth. And it's a lot, what I've learned a lot of times, if I'm able to just sit still, pray, continue to read, continue to help someone with no strings attached, the feelings will pass anyhow. They will pass. I understand through my addiction that one of the reasons why, just one of the reasons why I used was because I did not know how to cope with my feelings. I didn't know how to identify my feelings. Now that I've gotten a little better and working with you guys, using is not an option. It would be a poor, poor excuse. I've gotten to a point in my life that I know right from wrong. I had to grow up to learn that. But I'm there now in that particular area. I just don't want to use no matter what. For me, I believe any person that's using today really want to be clean. They just have to find their way. This is my process in surrendering, giving up being a fake guy, stay on the course, follow instructions if I'm going to win. Accepting the fact that I am truly powerless over people, places, and things. I cannot manage you guys' lives, but I have the ability to utilize the power that y'all give me. Excuse me. You guys were my higher power. You guys was the one that laid the path. Say, Tom, you don't have to use no matter what, and things will get better. I never in my wildest dreams thought that it would change the way it has. I've lost a home in here, the devastating separation of a wife, a car. I lost a job. There's no reason to use. There's no reason to use. And that's something that never stuck well with me, you know, because using was the easy way. I use, I don't feel, I'm all right. But this is what I wasn't realizing. After doing that process, and then you come down, guess what? Everything's steady. So that's enough evidence for me to surrender in that area. And to realize that it just doesn't make sense. You know, all I want to do is just live. Live and let live and have a good time. You know, being manageable. What I have to do for me to manage my life, period, is have some boundaries, set up some structure, and stay in my lane. You know, understand what's clear and plain for me to do. And I understand what's clear and plain for me not to do. I thought manageability was just about money. It's about your life, how you conduct yourself, you know. Surrender is a factor that I'm not in control. You thinking you're in control, you see where it took you at, you know. Giving up. Just give up. The hell with it, man. You know, let it go. Get the white flag. You know, I mean, I fought a hell of a fight out there. But I couldn't win the war. And I will always go back to reload. And every time I reloaded, I got shot down again. Reload, get shot down. It's like dig a hole, fill a hole. God seemed fit for me not to dig a hole so deep that I would be laying in it now, and I'm standing here. And his mercy. Yeah. His grace got me here. But his mercy is what's keeping me here. You can believe that. I understand the power that's much greater than me. And like I said, first and foremost is you guys. I use you guys to get me where I'm at today. I'm very, very, very grateful to my sponsees. Those guys has been through the ups and downs with me. And what I try to do to take away my arrogance is that I would sit down with them from time to time or call them and say, man, look, this is what I'm doing, good, bad, or indifferent. And if you think you're not getting what you need to get from me, then I suggest you move on. They all stuck with me. What I believe in is that if I'm honest with my sponsees, then they're going to be honest with me. You know, I'm a real cruddy dude. Let me be the first to tell you. But I talk about my crutch to them. Because if I don't, what I'm doing is setting myself up the jackpot. You know, I really don't want to live with secrets. I really, really don't. I look at the point in one of our literature that it talks about the relapse, it might be the final job to get you here. For me, relapse played a major part in my recovery. I'm not telling you it's a requirement now, don't get it wrong. You don't have to do that. But that's what happened to me. And after the relapse and getting back and staying, that was my final job. I have made a commitment to totally surrender to the way I want to live my life by myself. But I will listen to you guys and take a chance and live the way you suggest. What I appreciate is all the experiences that's been shared with me over the last 14 years. I'm grateful. Thank you. What I appreciate is you guys was here for me, which enables me to be here for someone else. I understand the importance. I truly, truly do. I'm going to say this in closing. I guess if we have time, then he can open up if he chooses to. It's a lot of people died today that have never died before. I'm going to say this one more time. It's a lot of people that have died today that have never died before. We are blessed to be amongst the living. My sponsor always tell me, or have said numerous times, Tom, if you tell yourself your story, and you tell your story to yourself and be truthful, you know that you need some help. Be honest, he said in choice words, don't they know my sponsor? But that's what he tells me. But he also tells me about the man in the mirror. That might be the best thing Michael Jackson ever said. Look at the man in the mirror. I've been able to use so many different little things in my recovery to just get me through the day. But without a clear head, a new way to think, or say a new way to perceive things, I would never get that. Because I live on image when I'm using. I don't have to live on image today. I can just be Thomas. But now the key is this. I can just be me. But am I all right with me? Do I love me? Because I can easily tell you I love you.
Yeah, that's right.
What do I do on a daily basis to prove to myself that I love me? First of all, I don't use. Second of all, I only give
what I expect in return. And that's not conditional, because like I said in the beginning, I know I cannot get what I don't give. It's a story that was told to me about the selfless man. And it was told something like this. The most selfless man that I will ever meet is a bum. And I said, well, can you explain? What do you mean? A bum has nothing but self. If you are able to give self, you've done a great deed. So what I do is just try to give me. I have no money, no fancy cars, none of that. But I am more than grateful, and I am more than willing to give self at any given time. My name is Thomas. I'm an addict, and I'm going to keep coming back. Thank you.